Programs will start thinking, and the people will stop.
I still don't understand why you want to break into the system.
Because, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence. If I got in for it, I could reconstruct it.
Everyone, welcome to the September 21st edition of the In the Now show. This is your host, Slip Mode, along with my sidekick,
VR.
And doing another show coming at you. Got a lot of good information and maybe some announcements for some possible cool things that we're going to be doing here at the show. But, all right. How's things been going for you, VR?
They've been going.
Sweet. Anything coming at all? Is everything's going?
No, that's why God made come white and piss yellow, so every once in a while I could tell if I was coming or going.
Awesome. Awesome. So that's some insight for all of our listeners.
Yeah, I've been a little...
All right.
I'll figure it out one of these days.
Sweet. Okay. Well, I've divided up the articles into a few different categories. And our first one that we're going to kick off with is Microsoft warns of a new Windows flaw. Now, this news is a little bit old. I mean, it's 11 days old. We talked about the DCOM exploit that came out almost about 2 months ago. And now there's another one that came out, and it's just as bad. So this affects Windows NT 4.0, Windows 2000, XP, and Server 2003. Millennium 98, 95, those aren't affected, and nor should you be running them. But this vulnerability came out, and the problem with it is that they're waiting for another person to come out with another huge worm like the Blaster Worm. So there's a patch available, and I suggest everyone go download it and protect yourself. And definitely, you know, you shouldn't be even allowing any of this traffic anyways. Definitely use your firewalls to block most of this traffic that these viruses exploit. So, let's see, there's that Microsoft worm, our virus, could have a worm after that. But there's a Microsoft worm that's out, it's called the Swen worm. And I keep getting this email a billion times a day. Basically, it's an email, and it's really official looking, and it comes from Microsoft, it appears to come from Microsoft. And basically, it asks you to run this patch. And if you run it, basically you get yourself infected with the worm itself, and then it will periodically serve up a message box asking you to input your email settings and or basically your email address and your username and password, and then that gets sent off, and who knows what fun is had with that. Sounds kind of like a spam thing to
like a spam driven virus to get everybody's email address and all that,
yeah,
because it's a really good little piece of social engineering. It's like, oh, Microsoft is actually taking the proactive term in your position and trying to patch people's stuff that that they purchased from them, trying to actually provide good customer service.
Yeah,
and they get bit in the end.
Yeah, they're definitely taking advantage of the wary Microsoft users, and I can definitely see people clicking on this. I mean, it looks pretty official, the icons, the graphics, and I get about 7 to 10 emails a day that are the hoax, so it's pretty bad. So watch out for that. Don't accept any information. You know, Microsoft did say that they're going to get more proactive on doing their patching, and, you know, that's another thing to make you think, hey, you know, yeah, I should run this, but don't run anything that comes in the email. And if it's a link and you want to follow the link in the email, make sure it actually goes to the Microsoft site. And
because couldn't that be doing the same thing? As if it could be disguised as a hyperlink and actually run the script?
Yeah, the hyperlink could go. Well, this isn't what's in the worm, but you could put a hyperlink in there that would go somewhere else. You know, so I'm saying is that don't run any files that you get through email, especially from people you don't know or companies. Posing, sending you information. Companies will not typically send you a file unless you ask for it, and that's a rarity. And then, if you're going to follow any links on an email, make sure the link that you follow, you know where it's going. So, you know, especially in this situation, if I'm saying somebody's posing at Microsoft and then they had a link that didn't go to Microsoft's site, then obviously something's wrong. So.
But isn't by that time you're about done?
Done as far as?
Well, that you could have already contracted the virus, or
no? This is a program you actually have to run in this instance.
Well, they can direct you to the site, and the site can actually exploit one of the new, like the
vulnerabilities. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can have stuff like that. You typically, I'm just saying that things to watch out for. Don't accept an email from anybody you don't know. But if it's posing as a company, they're not. Don't use any files, obviously. And if there's going to be a link there, okay. Let's just say there's no files there, but there's a link there. Don't follow the link because. Most likely the link is going to go somewhere else, and you could check to see if it does. That's pretty much the tips I'm trying to give.
Yeah, like the guy that was like using misspellings of like Disneyland and stuff like that to direct people to porn sites.
Yeah, yeah, or WhiteHouse.com.
Yeah, that's pretty innovative, but kind of shiesty at the same time.
Yeah, go get a real job. That's my suggestion.
Yeah, get to other forms of advertising that people screw up.
This is really interesting. I always heard about this. I've heard about this a long time ago, but now I actually seen a picture of what it is. And what it is basically the first computer bug. It's a description of it. And basically it was a moth found trapped between points at relay number 70, panel F, of the Mark II Aiken relay calculator while it was being tested at Harvard University September 9th, 1945. The operators affixed the moth to the computer log with the entry, first actual case of bug being found. They put out the word that they had debugged the machine, thus introduced the term debugging a computer program. In 1988, the log with the moth, still taped by the entry, was in the Naval Surface Warfare Center Computer Museum at Dahlgren, Virginia. So it actually has them off taped and a small picture of it. So that was pretty interesting. I heard about that. I didn't know if it was real or not. I assumed it was, and you know, I see a picture of it. So.
Yeah, I always wondered why it was, you know, like bug, because was there actually like little like bugs running around that, you know, screwed up the computer?
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely.
That's the image that it brings to mind, anyway.
Yeah, definitely, you know, just even with dust in your PC, you know, you always want to, maybe every 3 months, 6 months, go through and dust that thing out, because that can really cause some problems with the airflow in there and make things go bad.
Well, yeah, and they can also cause shorts and other things.
Yep. Well, let's see. So, that is the extent of the Microsoft bugs. So be careful about that. And they did find a new OpenSSH exploit, or basically a vulnerability in OpenSSH that could be exploited. And basically the systems in question are newer versions of Linux distributions. And what you want to do is go out and check for that distribution to see if there is an update, or basically just go down and update the most up-to-date code from OpenSSH and download it and install it to cover it. The funny thing is that they came out with some distributions, they came out with one fix, then didn't really fix it, and then they came out with a second one. So be really careful about that. You want to basically grab the most up-to-date package that there is for your distribution. Maybe check the version that they have available against you know, OpenSSH. I think it's .org. And see what's available there. Okay. Also, some of the suggestions here that I read, which are some of the obvious ones, basically upgrade to LSH, which is GNU's version of the SSH spec. And you can also add explicit rules to your edge devices, which means devices that are out on the internet or seen by the internet, allowing SSH from only known hosts, just TCP wrappers, like the host deny and host allow file on your Unix machine. And then also is put SSH behind a VPN or RFC 1918 space. So, you know, it's encrypted and it's behind a VPN network that typically the internet will not get to knowingly. So that's some of the suggestions of what to do. But also, there was an exploit that came out for LSH. Well, they were checking through their code and they did find a vulnerability there. So LSH actually has an update as well. So just you know, just another good reason to stay up to date on bugs for any system, be it Linux or Unix or Windows, because nothing's perfect.
Well, because then that would really suck that you change programs, you upgrade to another one because of a bug, and then you just find that you have another bug. You're just exchanging one problem for another.
Yeah, and that happens. That completely happens out there. So that's, you know, you have to stay on top of it. It only, you know, in all honesty, it doesn't take very much time, and you'll feel better about it. You'll feel, you know, when this fear comes out that all these bugs are available or whatever, you won't be sitting there quaking in your boots worrying about what may be happening or what may not be happening. You'll feel like you accomplished something. So, I mean, there's benefits all around to just get it done and stay on top of the game. And most of the time it's really simple, and then it doesn't really require much to make it happen. All right, so that's pretty much it for the biggest bugs of the of this 2 weeks.
Well, that's more than normal, though.
Not in the last few months. I mean, there's actually you know, a lot of stuff has been coming out for Microsoft, a lot of email viruses and stuff like that that maybe, you know, and all, they come out, but they also stay around for a while, too. So people are dealing with the damage of, you know, the blaster worm, so Big E and stuff like that. Still hanging out there on the internet. And, I don't know, I think lately there's been a high volume, and this volume here is probably about the same as what we've been seeing. But, you know, the stuff that they do come out with is actually pretty malicious, and it's not typical stuff that, you know, the low-end viruses that don't really do too many things or, you know, only get you so far in the operating system. Seems like a lot of stuff's coming out that's really totally compromises your machine. So using firewalls and patching and staying up to date is definitely a benefit for yourself. And also, I mentioned in the last show that I will be doing an article for BinRev, which is binrev.com. And it's a small magazine. Hopefully it'll be large. And I'll be doing the article on IP tables. It's probably going to be pretty large. I asked Dank Dog over there if they would accept a large article, and they said if it's a good article, they'll accept it. So hopefully hopefully it'll pass their standards to fit as many pages as it may. But it'll be really useful, and it'll help people firewall their Linux machines or, you know, machines that are running IP tables. So.
Right. Thank you for the community service announcement.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's good. It's good.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
That's right.
Okay, this is we've talked about black holes in the past. And, you know, on the show, we hop around to different subjects because...
We can.
Yeah, well, we can. And, you know, I find all things very interesting, and this is pretty interesting as well. Basically, they are trying to discover... or they already have discovered black holes by the sounds that they make. Basically, I think his name is Fahern, and I think I described it wrong, but him and his colleagues used NASA's orbiting Chandra X-ray Observatory to investigate X-rays coming from the cluster's heart. Basically, they found a very strange anomaly. Researchers presume that the supermassive black hole, which perhaps 2.5 billion times the mass of our sun, lay there, and the activity around the center bolstering its consumption. They've noticed some strange activity, and they've also noticed that there's a sound that comes from there. The intensity of the sound is comparable to human speech, said Andrew Fabian, of the Institute of Astronomy at Cambridge, England, but the pitch of the sound is about 57 octaves below middle C, roughly the middle of the standard piano keyboard. So they're using that to try to find black holes or, you know, areas to where they might be in. And,
well, that might be like a signature sound that a black hole might, you know, make of, like, because it actually does produce microwaves and other energies, that it might be a frequency that it's also... disturbing the matter that is around it, that's not at the, you know, the, what was it, event horizon, you know, that's a further out than the event horizon, and so we're able to see it move and quake, or it's putting off other energy. It's kind of a neat idea, but I'm not completely sure about the whole thing.
Well, they've definitely done it, and they've used it, and they're able to find basically what outlined, it looked like basically a black hole. They were able to produce an image based on the waves that they had received. And, you know, I know that black holes, you know, are basically sucking in matter, but they will disrupt everything all the way until they don't suck in matter. And that's probably what's being disrupted. And for some reason, it is able to create a tone that is emitted that will help discover the black hole. And I think that's what they're trying to do. Obviously, you know, I'm not a black hole specialist, but I think that it's shown here that it can be done. I'm actually looking at an image of it, and it's pretty interesting. Okay. Well, another interesting thing that you can do with sound is basically take... somebody had found this. It was an accident. And basically what somebody did was take beer, and basically they were a CD DJ, where they were DJing and they used CDs. And this man typically used, he typically had beer in his hands, that he said, and that would actually rub off on the CDs and then end up drying. And then he found after that the CDs began to play, that the beer manipulated the audio, or basically how the laser picked up the information off the CD and created some interesting audio effects. And he did some experiments, and actually were dipping CDs in a beer and putting smudging yogurt on it and letting it dry. And then the CD players brought back some interesting sounds. And one of the things he said, though, is that you don't want to put it into a PC because the software can't seem to handle it. If you put it in like a portable discman or maybe your stereo, it should play. Obviously, you don't want to put something that's too thick on there or be like, you know, smudging it to where it's unusable. But it definitely creates something very, very interesting as far as sound. I wanted to test it myself. I didn't have a chance to do it, but it'd be pretty interesting to check it out and see what it does.
I would think if you didn't want to use beer, you could make a sugar solution and wipe that over the CD and let it dry, and it'll crystallize and it'll form little crystals along that might diffract and deflect the CD laser. Probably do the same thing.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Probably get even more uniform and interesting effects, depending on the sugar's concentration.
Yeah, I think I think there'd be a lot of things you could do. So it might be interesting to take your favorite CD and dip it in some beer or some other items that won't totally get rid of the way to communicate to the CD and see what happens. Here's another thing I was interested to read. It was a pretty weird article. I didn't think that it would be totally plausible or happen, but there are a few groups of people out there that think that people that surf the internet should be licensed, like driving a car. What they wanted to do is basically say that if you're licensed to get on the internet, basically they can teach you about piracy and copyright and digital rights and stuff like that, and also help you get access to certain places and basically limit yourself with an internet license to where you can go, where you can't go, understanding certain things before you download files and shareware and all that stuff, and like I said before, impose more restrictions. So that's a terrible idea.
Yeah, because I don't think that even really inhibits a lot of the security issues. Really, because if you have a computer and it's hooked up to the internet, you're going to have security issues. And it really doesn't matter on how fluently licensed you are, unless you're actually doing something about it, you're not going to protect yourself.
I don't think it's really in the ends of protecting yourself. Exactly. I mean, it is as far as like understanding the laws. I think it's more of a reason for people to pit a licensing scheme, a way to restrict you, a way to track you with a license, a way to, have companies impose their restrictions. It's just a way to tie you into a big process. Once you have to register for something and use that for whatever means and constantly show your registration gives you a unique ID. And also that unique ID can be watched, and the unique ID can be used against you. So it's a very very bad idea in my mind. I don't think it's ever going to come to light. And it doesn't seem to be shown to very coming to very much light through what I've read. But
yeah, it doesn't seem like a really good, valid argument.
Yeah, it seems... Well, you know what? Once you get enough companies out there pressing, especially like the RIAA with the DMCA Act and stuff like that, and piracy and all that, once you can confuse and get enough people involved when it comes to money, and they'll pass some laws.
Yeah, if there's enough money involved, yeah.
But the funny thing is I don't know if it's going to work if one country tries to license somebody and then a whole group of other countries don't try to license you for anything. It's really hard to control the internet enough. I think if there was a licensing scheme, it'd be pretty easy to get around it, unless it was like totally out, enrolled, blanketed, and already like built into your system and you didn't even know it. Most people aren't going to support that. I know definitely I could say with confidence that any open source operating system will not support that, because it wouldn't support any of the guidelines and theories for open source. So I can definitely see that is not happening. So, yeah. All right. Well, that is it's a pretty depressing article. I don't think it'll ever come to light. Well, here is moving along. I was reading about the Linux 2.6 kernel, and basically that is the most up-to-date kernel available for Linux. It's getting to a point where it can be really usable. Mostly people that are hobbyists may want to run it. You may not want to run it on your mission-critical systems. But if you're at home and you want to test it out and you want to see what what it can do, I would definitely try it out. There's a lot of performance gains with the Linux 2.6 kernel. You can run it now. It runs most of your stuff just fine. I mean, 2.4 is running. It's working great. It's built off of that. and just add some new features. And some of those new features, you know, if you're really going die hard and testing out some of that stuff and some bleeding edge hardware, you know, you may have some issues, but I think that you could probably try it and use it and enjoy it. There is a lot of improvements on latency. It's basically the preemptive kernel. It's got a lot of the preemptive patches, and that's something that Gen 2 has been supporting for a long time. They had the low latency preemptive kernel patches applied to their 2.4 Linux kernel, and that was one of the bigger reasons that people enjoyed running it, because they, you know, people would live and die by the fact that they had the preemptive patches, and it was a much more successful kernel by, you know, hardware standards, if you really monitored that. Basically, the performance from seek time to actual, command completion in some areas are up by, three times faster than what the 2.4 kernel does. It's also, has some built-in functionality for 64-bit machines. And it's a lot better SCSI handling and basically input-output and other addressing handling. And it's very good for embedded systems. It also works well with large memory on 32-bit processors. So all in all, the Linux 2.6 kernel is really, really cool if you want to check it out. And, of course, you know, once it becomes widespread, it's definitely going to be beneficial to run it and get all the new up-to-date features with Linux and use them and be screaming along.
Right on.
So that's...
That'd be fun.
Yeah, that's the brief update for the 2.6 kernel. I didn't go too in-depth, but basically it's better all around and supports a lot of new technologies, which is really cool. All right. Well, we are jumping along as usual, but trying to give out all the information that comes to us. This is something I read. It was very, very, very interesting because, well, usually what I try to put on the show is I hope it's interesting. There's two Bank of Montreal computers containing hundreds, potentially thousands of sensitive customer files narrowly escaped being sold on eBay.com. This was earlier September. And it says, basically calling into question the process by which the financial institutions dispose of old computer equipment. Information on one of the computers included the names, addresses, phone numbers of several hundred bank clients, along with their bank account information, including account type and number, balances, and in some cases, balances in GICs, RSPs, lines of credit, credit cards, and insurance. Many files were dated as recent as late of 2002, while some went back to 2000. And
wow, that's really old stuff.
Well, I'm sure a lot of that information is still very valid.
I was being sarcastic.
Maybe not the dollar amounts in the account, but Geoff Ellis, a 26-year-old master's student living in New York, purchased the computers last week from Ecosys Canada Incorporated, a computer assessment management firm in Mississauga. Okay, sorry about that. I got that wrong. He paid $400 each for the two powerful IBM Netfinity servers, which have a cost about $5,000 brand new. Ellis buys these machines, fixes them up, and then resells the used computer on equipment on eBay.com. He had posted the two machines on the popular online auction site for 6 hours before he noticed, after turning one of them on, that it contained an operating system that let him access the files without any password. He immediately removed the items from the website and said, "My first response was shock." And basically, he had contacted the company and told them about what happened. Two other IBM computer servers that Ellis didn't purchase from Ecosys have been placed in quarantine. Call of Tabs, which is a vice president at Ryder, said Ecosys is a subcontractor for the bank's Montreal head office and should have made sure the computers were wiped.
Well, smells a little remnant of the Australian
Sydney Airport.
Yeah, that one. It's just these narrow, these slight human errors of judgment or process that allows for great information to be released.
Yeah, it's definitely a security vulnerability to not wipe those machines. You know, I don't know if EcoSys is the one that goes and actually picks up the machines, or if there's an admin on staff. You know, even before it left the company, it should have just been wiped, and I don't think that'd be very hard to do.
Right, especially with that kind of information. It shouldn't even have left the bank without being that, without that information being cleaned off. Yeah. At least once.
Yeah, and if the, I mean, if EcoSys was the contractors or maybe like that, and they handled all the machines, you know, as it, I think as part of a security policy that they should have the machines wiped at the bank and shown that they're wiped and have them move from there. So that is definitely a bit of laziness going on. You know, maybe this stuff happens all the time, and it's just, you know, because they recently had that story in Sydney where two computers were taken from the airport. And maybe this stuff happens all the time, and they just felt like reporting this one, too, as well, because it's in the minds of people out there wondering, you know, what's happening with this equipment. And,
well, that, you know, the guy that refurbished them and was going to sell them on eBay, he didn't have to tell him. He could have taken that information, or he could have cleaned it off himself and just passed it on.
Yeah.
Or passed it on, or sold all that information to the highest bidder.
Yeah. Yeah, he could have got himself in jail, too, for a long time, probably.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he took the better route to...
But I hear that there's a lot of, like, you know, company espionage that goes on that's not reported and all
that. Oh, yeah.
Because it doesn't want, you know, because they don't want the public to go, oh, you know, they're not doing everything they can for their own security, and that repercussions is your security.
Oh, yeah. From my experience and from what people I've known that have been working in the field, it happens all the time. All the time. You know, you can consider in your life, you know, as you go through your day, all the possible annoyances that could happen to you or problems or, you know, things that you can't control that could go wrong. It happens everywhere. It happens in the business world. It happens everywhere. So it happens. It's, you know, it sucks. But, you know, you got to do your best to try to secure the information that you have about yourself and make sure that the others are doing it as well. I know you can't go down to the bank and say, hey, you know, are you securing my information? But
yeah, let me check.
Yeah.
Let me get into those files, please.
But, you know, if you find somebody that has that problem, move to another bank. You know, it sounds, you know, like, wow, you know, big whoop, I moved to another bank, you know. But, I mean, it's really, it's all you can do.
Well, yeah, because that's like our, you know, with our government that runs essentially our daily lives, we choose, you know, we govern what companies survive and which don't by what we use. And so, you know, it's kind of like your right to vote of what services from what company you choose to use. If you don't like how they're doing it, don't use them, and other people, you know, hopefully are doing the same thing, and they'll go away, or they'll change their ways.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, do what you can. And if you work at one of those companies, do what you can there. So we all need to do our part.
Yeah, be a stickler. You know, if everybody hates you, well, then you're doing your job well.
Yeah, or you're doing it really bad.
Yeah. Well, no, because they really don't care.
Yeah, you know, I noticed that. I noticed that. So.
Yeah, but if you piss everybody off, you're usually doing a good job. And keep it up. I'm giving you props.
So yes, you know, so that's anywhere we've talked about, you know, worms out there you got to watch. You got to, you know, watch your data might be taken from, you know, computers at banks and given out. And it's just, gosh, there's just so many things, you know. And that's usually, you know, I try to come out and give, you know, very informative things, which I believe I'm doing. But, you know, a lot of times it sounds pretty depressing. You know, and sometimes it's kind of depressing for me to do the show sometimes because I'm like, oh, God, that sucks.
This is a relentless, you know, trial of trying to keep going and keep up.
Yeah, because in the now, I mean, basically when you say the words in the now, you're thinking, you know, what's going on now? And, you know, basically this show tries to be informative, coming from a stance to where we're trying to let people know, you know, see past what everyday life is trying to look like and show what it really is like. And that's what's happening now. You know, it's not the stuff that it's trying to show you what they want you to see it as is not what's now. It's what they're trying to, you know, portray as now and then and in the future. Yeah, I'm going to you know, it gets a little depressing, I guess, sometimes for me, but...
Yeah, because we all are just living in this, like, facade or this matrix of social construction. That we all live and interact with the world for the meaning that we have for it or what we create for it. And, you know, that. But then there's a lot of truth that's behind it, that's deeper, that's, you know, beyond our social construction. And this is the kind of thing that goes on without, you know, that slips by us.
Yeah, I mean, basically, too, it's a part of, you know, problem solving. You know, the information I use from learning from this show and doing the research and staying abreast of news and reading, you know, I use that to help myself make better decisions. And it's a survival, basically, you know, it's a survival tactic of the world we live in now. You know, if we wanted to talk about In-N-Out, you know, back a long time ago, we might be talking about how to make the coolest bow, you know, that shoots the straightest and goes the farthest, and you know, techniques for survival and food and, you know, stuff like that. That's, you know, something that's going to be critical information that's going to you know, make things happen.
There are the edible berries are the ones with the three leaves. And not with the four.
Yeah.
And we want to make that correction from last month. So all of you who are there eating those choke cherries, you know, you need to watch out.
Yeah. So, I mean, that, you know, that's critical information. That's something you'd want to know. You wouldn't want to eat the wrong berry. That would be bad.
Or the wrong download. That would be bad, too.
Yeah.
Same thing. You get a little sick, your computer gets sick. It's both, you know, are pivotal to your functionality and survival in the world today.
Yeah. You know, some things later I'll be mentioning that might be shifting the show into a little bit more interesting way. We're going to see if we can pull it off, but I'll talk about that in a minute. Here's another bit of news that is not cool. It's not cool at all.
Is it hot?
No.
Is it lukewarm?
No.
Is it just that really uncomfortable temperature?
Yeah, it's cold. It's really cold.
All right. It's not cool. It's cold.
Yeah. It's basically, we've talked about this, the Patriot Act and all those laws that got passed right after September 11th that just got rushed out there. You know, some groups were able to intervene before that actually, you know, the whole spec fully got passed and said, hey, you know, that can't go, and pulled it out. It was rushed through Congress really fast, Patriot Act, Patriot Act 2, and a lot of bad things are in there, and they're being used against common criminals now. And that is, in my opinion, not what its original intent is for. Attorney General John Ashcroft completed a 16-city tour this week, which is early September, defending the Patriot Act as the key to preventing a second catastrophe terrorist attack. Federal prosecutors have brought more than 250 criminal charges under the law, with more than 130 convictions or guilty pleas. The law passed 2 months after the September 11th attacks, erased many restrictions that had barred the government from spying on its citizens, granting agents new powers to use wiretaps, conduct electronic and computer eavesdropping, and access private financial data.
Yeah, that sounds like Big Brother to me.
Yeah, and it's knocking at your door now.
Yeah.
The Justice Department said that it has used authority given to it by the Patriot Act to crack down on currency smugglers and seize money hidden overseas by alleged bookies, con artists, and drug dealers.
Wow, they're really terrorists. Last time I saw it, they were just capitalists.
Yeah. Federal prosecutors used the act in June to file a charge of terrorism using a weapon of mass destruction against the California man after a pipe bomb exploded in his lap, wounding him as he sat in his car.
That's a weapon of mass destruction when it just wounded one man.
Yeah, he's not dead. And the mass destruction, I think, was his body. So it destroyed as a mass, a portion of a piece of body. Depends. Yeah, it's a weapon of mass destruction.
Oh,
or maybe
and
not.
What? How can we, you know, with that kind of manipulation of terms and meaning... Oh, my God.
Where is your trust, you know?
Yeah. Like you're sitting on the street corner, and you're impeding traffic. There's no one on the street. You're impeding traffic, sir. You're now, you know, that's treasonous right now. We're going to have to hang you.
A North Carolina county prosecutor charged a man accusing of running a methamphetamine lab with breaking a new state law barring the manufacture of chemical weapons. If convicted, Martin Duane Miller could get 12 years in prison or life for a crime that usually brings about 6 months. Prosecutor Jerry Wilson says he isn't abusing the law, which defines chemical weapons of mass destruction as any substance that is designed or has the capability to cause death or serious injury. It contains toxic chemicals.
Wait, that's most of the products that are under your kitchen sink as well.
Yeah. Yeah,
now,
Jerry.
Let's go after 3M. Come on, let's go.
Yeah, Jerry, pat yourself on the back for twisting that one. A lot of lawyers seem to do that.
Not abusing the law whatsoever. Using that as a big old club.
In one case prosecuted this year, investigators used a provision of the Patriot Act to recover $4.5 million from a group of telemarketers accused of tricking elderly U.S. citizens into thinking that they had won a Canadian lottery. Prosecutors said the defendants told victims that they would receive their prize as soon as they paid thousands of dollars in income tax on their winnings.
Wow.
Wow.
That's, yeah.
It's not right, but they're not terrorists.
No.
More than 150 local governments have passed resolutions opposing the law as an overly broad threat to constitutional rights. Really?
Wow. At least somebody has some sense.
Yeah. You know, it just doesn't get any more pathetic than that. I'm sorry. You know, go check out the EFF, okay? Check out how they've been trying to battle this ever since its inception. It's very bad. And especially the DMCA. The DMCA is just trying to screw you on technology.
DMCA?
Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Oh, yes. Well, pretty soon it would be like you run a red light. Oh, you know, you're interfering with the flow of society. You're a terrorist. Yeah, let's go to the Air Force base and detain you.
Well, you know, I was watching a movie called Monster Squad, and I mentioned this before, but in the movie, you know, they're trying to fight these monsters or whatever, and, you know, they're sharpening this wooden stake in shop class, and they're making silver bullets, and, you know, definitely things you don't want happening at your school, but, I mean, you'd never see that on TV now. And I'm not saying it's supposed to be on TV, but I'm saying the fear is there. And, you know, VR and me have both watched Bowling for Columbine, which is a great movie.
Yeah, that's great.
And in that movie, they made a lot of intelligent points on both sides of the story. They tried to compare our country to another country, which is close to ours, kind of, which is Canada. And they took a lot of the finer points that people were making about problems with violence in America. And they said, well, one of its guns, right? Well, Canada's got lots of guns.
Well, they have more guns than they have people.
I think they have like 30 million people, and they've got like 7 million guns, something like that. Either way, they've got lots of guns.
Yeah.
And we've got lots of guns. They said, well, maybe it's the violent movies and video games. No, they have the same movies over there. They get a lot of American television, and they get the violent games as well.
Yeah.
And so does other countries. Same thing. They said, well, America's got a violent past. You don't think Germany's got a violent past?
Yeah.
The Holocaust, does anyone remember that? It's a little bit more violent than slavery we had over here.
Or the, you know, the American Revolution.
And the British.
The Mexican War. Yeah, the Battle of 1812.
And then, what was the other one?
And comparatively to all the other countries, we've had a very, very few wars.
Yeah. And we also have learned at a rapid pace to not make the mistakes that other countries have made. Or we've made some of those mistakes and we no longer do them. Of course, we have some mistakes that we do today.
And we continue to do them over and over and over again.
Yeah. So we're not perfect in that sense. But basically, one of the interesting points that the movie kind of showed out is one of the statistics, I think the highest country, I don't remember which country it was, but the highest death rate, and I think that's when the movie came out in 2002, the highest so far, other than our country, was 368 deaths a year. You know, by arms, I believe it was by a firearm. In America, it's 11,000 some deaths a year by a firearm. And they had looked at one thing, and they looked at what Canadians watch on their evening news, and it's a lot less filled with fear and violence than ours is. And here's the thing, is that what the movie kind of talked about, which I agree, and it was well presented in the movie, is that Americans are taught to fear and consume. And Marilyn Manson actually made this exact assumption that, you know, you're listening to the news and you hear how bad Marilyn Manson is, and you go through and you see all these deaths, and then all of a sudden there's the commercial, and you got to get the Colgate, you know, so you don't have bad breath because women won't talk to you, and you got to go over here and get the new car because, you know, women won't talk to you, and you got to go and you know, do all these things, because if you don't, you're going to be...
You're going to be ostracized.
And you need to go and buy the home security products, and you need to go through and...
Because you have all this stuff, and everybody wants that because they want the stuff so women can, well, talk to them.
Yeah, and you hear all the stuff, and you feel quite uncomfortable, so you feel like you have to do all these reactions. Now, you know, some people might not agree with what I'm talking about. Fine, okay? But I think it's right. And, you know, one of the things that they're talking about is that all that fear... You know, that you feel like you got to do all this stuff and all these angles being presented at all times could, you know, potentially leave you pretty antsy, you know? And one of the things that they did in Canada, and, you know, I'm not touting Canada, right, but I'm just talking to the effect of this, is that a lot of them said they don't lock their doors. And, well, what the producer did of the show went to Canadians' doors and opened the door. He apologized, you know, when he saw somebody in there, but he just kept checking to see if doors were unlocked, and a lot of them were unlocked. I personally don't lock... Well, I do lock the door if no one's here, because I don't want any of my equipment to be taken.
Well, you also don't want to come home and see somebody, like, taking a nap on your couch with a, you know, with your, you know, groceries already eaten on the table. Yeah. It'd be kind of... I would feel a little uncomfortable about that. You're like, yeah, hey, dude, do you want to pay rent?
Yeah. So basically, the fear of all that being spread, and also, you know, with things that are going on in office, George W. Bush can do whatever the hell he wants because everyone's afraid.
Yeah, because he's got all the power. That's where I really got out of the movies. Well, a lot of us really feel, like, powerless most of the time. We're so
constrained. We want government to take care of us.
Yeah, because we're so constrained with our, you know, with legalities and... You know, we can't protect ourselves, and so, you know, we can't think for ourselves, so the government's got to legislate us to, you know, to keep us safe and to keep us secure, but, you know, so we don't have to think about it. But at the same time, we do, because whenever we want to, like, stretch our arms and be, you know, it's okay to not to be very safe right now, and but yet I'm still breaking the law, and so... And
yeah, because people are getting sold on the idea that, well, you know, in case it happens, you know, we should allow, you know, these things to be in place, you know? And then people say, well, what do you got to hide? Sometimes it's not a matter of what I got to hide. It's a matter of it's none of your damn business. Is you know, you want to be able to have the right to say, it's none of your damn business. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, so it really comes down to power. We felt more empowered about our own decisions and about our own lives. We may not have to, essentially, whenever there is conflict, to essentially go to the most powerful thing we have, is, you know, is a gun, because words don't seem to mean anything anymore. Because we've all been lied to and deceived by every authority figure in our lives. Oh, wait, that might be just my life, but... Sorry.
Well, you know... I don't know, it's just the thing is that... you know, there's a lot of complaining going on about... You know, if we have this problem, you know, and fear being spread, we need to fix it by doing this. Meanwhile, our borders are open, wide open. Wide open! Arizona and California are talking about giving immigrants licenses that have been here for 6 years. I mean, there's a lot to really talk about. There's a lot of delicate opinions there. You know, they do come here and do jobs that we don't want to do sometimes, but sometimes they don't come here and do anything and get tons of welfare and health insurance and all this other crap the minute they, you know. And if you give them a license, see, this is what they wanted to, this is what they're lying to you. They said that if they have a license, that they're going to be able to drive safely and they're going to get car insurance.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't think they're going to get car insurance. They're going to, you know, basically if you have a license, you have the right to do everything that another American can do. Nobody here asks for your American passport. They ask for your license.
Yeah.
You know, and your Social Security. But a lot of times they'll accept a license. You know, something to talk about.
And also the license number, you can quite often just substitute that number as your Social Security number, and no one ever checks.
Yeah, very true.
You can just say, yeah, that's my Social Security number, unless you're doing, like, FBI work. They're not going to check.
Oh, yeah. I was watching this Bowling for Columbine with a friend of mine. They said, oh, I know what it is. I know why America has all these problems. I know. In the issues of guns and stuff like that. Is that we've got so many cultures here. And they talked about that, you know, thing that when Richard Moore went into Canada, he's like, funny. I saw, you know, tons of Mexicans and black people and Asian people, Puerto Rican people, and Spanish, you know, everyone.
Well, and they're a bilingual country.
Yeah, bilingual country. So, I mean, well, we're getting there, actually, with the Spanish.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not touting Canada as being, you know, the way you need to go, but I'm saying that watch it and think. Do some critical thinking. And, you know, instead of giving everything up to the government, maybe just everyone should have a little bit of common sense, you know, maybe. And a lot of this fear, you know, kind of screws you up. You know, you don't. What was it? One person I asked, I told them that how to modify something on their computer, on their Windows computer, and they said, "You can do that?" Not like, wow, you can do that. That's cool. More like, am I allowed to touch that? Well, of course, you paid for it. You know what I mean? Of course you can change it if you want to. you know, you just can't resell it if it's, you know, Microsoft. You know, of course you can modify it and stuff like that. The fear that, you know, he's going to break some Microsoft law. Who cares, you know, about that? That's just, so, you know, it's just, it's gotten off the deep end. It's gotten pretty bad. And, people like the EFF are out there, you know, people at the In Now Show, people at other shows, Radio Freak America, and...
you know, I want to start a new political party called the Todd Beamer Party.
Is Todd Beamer always the president?
No, Todd Beamer was the guy on Flight 93 that said, let's roll.
No, I know, I was making a joke.
Yeah, okay.
I wouldn't want a Todd Beamer dictator guy.
No, it's just the one. It would be like the new libertarians, but that actually would be a real political force that would actually, like, you know, go and speak out and protest.
Yeah, with bulletproof vests, hopefully.
That's right.
so yeah, that's the news there. That that's being abused, and we got to do our best to, as we see cases come up, to. Do some critical thinking. Send some emails off to our congressman. Sounds funny, right? Send it off to your congressman. You don't believe it because you heard it so much. Oh, that's not true. No. Okay? There are people out there that'll listen. Not everyone's bad.
Well, and if you just keep sending it day after day and change it over and over, you know, every once in a while.
And put cool pictures in it.
You will get responses.
Yeah.
And you will see things change because there's only a few people that do that. And if you're persistent at it, your voice is going to overwhelm anybody else's.
Definitely.
And you will find that you will have so much power and so much control in the world, it'll blow your mind.
You can start your own Patriot Act 3.
That's right.
No.
But it will, like, overthrow everything from the previous acts and be all based on change the Bill of Rights to the Bill of Responsibilities.
Yeah. Yeah.
You must vote. You must carry arms. And you must have an opinion. It's great.
Well, you don't have to carry arms. You just have the right to. So if you'd like to, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be a whole lot nicer if, you know, like in 7th grade or 8th grade when they do, like, social studies, is they also do, like, small arms training. And so if they ever come around a gun later on, that they actually know how to, you know, to operate it safely and effectively. Then we'll have a lot less accidents in the world.
Or they might think it's really cool and go home and play with it.
Well, then they're... Yeah.
There's always something...
Well, then they could, you know, have access to a gun anyway. Because there's enough of them out there that they would play with another gun and shoot themselves. It wouldn't be the education that would cause them to go and experiment and... and blow their head off, that wouldn't be very good education now, would it?
No.
It's like, you know what, if you put it up to your head or towards your body and you pull the trigger, it's going to hurt.
They're like, cool, because I hate this cruel world, and but I don't know. That's a really touchy situation. It's really hard to come up with something that really works.
Yeah, because we've discovered that in sex ed classes. Wow, when they teach it, it really kind of lowers the birth rate.
I actually couldn't stop laughing. I got kicked out. It was hilarious.
Oh, that explains a lot.
All right. Well, we don't have much SCO news, and that's a good thing.
Yay!
Because it's fizzling out, I think.
They're running
out of logic. That they never even had. Ow, it hurts.
Sorry.
I was meaning that. Basically, the last thing, and I'm just going to move quickly on it because it's just not a very exciting subject, is that... Well, I'm going to read this straight out. It makes it a lot easier. The SCO had no idea of the history of the code they showed at the SCO forum, basically talking about the validity of the code that's been so far shown to the public as being infringing code. Basically, that means that they probably have also very little idea or no idea about the history of the other snippets of code that they allegedly infringed. More clearly, this code does not know the history of the Unix historical code base or its own code. Let's extend this thought a little bit further. SCO did not know the history of the SCO forum snippets. Their lack of knowledge confirms that SCO did not do any detailed digging on even the most public chunk of code that they have even available to the public so far. If SCO couldn't verify a poster child code example, it's very safe to say that they have not spotted, that they have no spot mention per snippet and no systematic method per million lines of code for determining the history of any of the code in their legal claims. SCO may be doing string comparisons to say code X looks like code Y, but as the SCO form example shows, SCO needs to dig far further than this to prove that any type of infringing code exists. That SCO accepts the Raymond Peters conclusion, current conclusion, as both correct and as new information shows that SCO is not performing these checks even on a per snippet basis for code they choose to show. Some of the code, I think one of the codes was what I read, was one of the bits of code that they showed was actually like BSD code. It was already open code.
So it could have been actually stuff that could have originated from two different places.
Yeah, and it's not really under their control. So that's, that's just showing, it's fizzling out. It was
a big publicity ploy or whatnot, and...
Yeah, they're backed by Microsoft, they're backed by Sun, they're losing, and so is Microsoft. I don't know about Sun, they got some very good products out there, but things are changing. And there was actually a SCO letter that was sent out to the open source community. Basically, I wrote in my notes here, crap, that was all I had to say about it. It's just a bunch of crap. And then my other notes here says there was a response by Eric S. Raymond and Bruce Pierens to the SCO letter, and my notes here say response to crap. So they just responded.
Would that be toilet paper?
Yeah, but this stuff's pretty rough. But yeah, it could be. Well, it's recyclable.
All right.
So yeah, that's all the news there. I think it's time. Do we get to something that me and VR were talking about before the show? And I'd like to try this idea out and see if we could make things more interactive with people out there. Here is the idea. The idea is basically taking the In the Now show on the road. And as I'd like to travel to each of the 50 states, I don't think that's going to be a possibility. What I do think is I can wrap up this equipment and record with a laptop somewhere in public.
Do like the ending scenes of Pump Up the Volume kind of ass thing?
Something like that.
Except that we actually like stop and talk to people.
Yeah. I'm thinking that we could possibly go to a few different places around here and you know, maybe do the show and see how well it works. I have to see how well the hardware on my laptop here will work, do some testing. If not, I think I get my hands on something that will work. And, you know, I don't know about the people as far as, like, how willing they would be to just jump on a microphone.
Especially in downtown Safford. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really.
Downtown Safford. You know, we could go to Willow House and just, instead of them having a band...
Just to us?
Just to us.
That could be interesting.
You know, there's definitely people down there that I have a feeling that are concerned with, you know, their rights and things. And would be, you know, professional enough to participate. So it's just an idea. Of course, you know, anybody can always email us at slipmode@quest.net. And, you know, you can always post to the forums. And, you know, it's definitely going to liven things up. It's definitely going to make things very interesting when we get more people out there being involved. I really like for that to happen. So go to slipnet.org, and you can post there in the forums. You can always send an email. I'll definitely read any emails on the air. And we're going to try to see if we can make this thing go. Horrible. No. And see, we're going to test it out. I think I'm going to test it out and see if it's going to work.
You know, we could test it out, like 2,600 meetings.
Yeah, but that's only once. Well, yeah, we can do a show once a month. I mean, that would be really cool. That would be really cool.
And then, you know, we could also open it up to other 2,600 meetings and, you know, whatnot, and maybe grow from there if it's cool. But the possibility is always there.
Yeah.
So any other ideas, just let us know. Throw them out.
Yeah. So, yeah,
sponsor us to come to your 2,600 meeting. Yeah, just email us.
Oh, man. No, that's, well, there's only like one per state or major city, and I don't think we have the means to travel. But
there's a will, there's always a way.
Yeah, they can travel to have their whole 2,600 meeting come to us.
Exactly. A big old road trip caravan of 2,600 meetings all over the country.
Yeah.
We can have like a big like national convention of 2,600 meetings.
That's called hope.
Oh, well.
Well, I would assume it's cope.
We're really on, like, the micro level of having, like, all the individuals from every 2,600 meeting.
I think that's something that Emmanuel Goldstein would have to...
Probably organize,
not us. All right. Well, I think that's the end of our show. Hopefully, you know, we can make this happen. Maybe I'll do the next 2,600 meeting. That'd be great. That'd be really good. And... good idea. All right. Well, that's going to be the end of our show. I don't know if you've got anything else to put out there, VR.
No, I think I'm pretty well spent.
Awesome. All right. Well, that will be it for this show, and we'll see everyone in 2 weeks. This is Slipmode signing out.
Later.